The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All Ireland final week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
It's time for the performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances have just lacked that intensity.
So every Monday morning we go through the green, the red and the amber of the sporting weekend. And it was always going to be green or red for the green and red of Mayo this week. I mean, it was never going to be amber, I guess, was it? I thought they were going to win, and I thought that if they showed up, they had a really good chance of winning, and I expected them to show up because they showed up in 2016, they showed up in 2017. Maybe last year wasn't an amazing performance, but it was still better than the performance they put in on Saturday, I felt. I thought they were really poor. I thought there was this old sense of performance anxiety and a lack of a marquee forward conversation that came up once again, the conversation we were having before Cillian O'Connor cemented himself as one of the greatest forwards of his generation. It felt there were echoes of that, but it also felt we had got back to a point where Mayo were underperforming in the final. And I didn't see that coming because I felt that a big part of their mental block involved Dublin and they had got over that hurdle in the semi-final. So I thought there was a bit of the banishing of ghosts already done, and I thought that they would have been, they would have played in a free way. Didn't seem that way on Saturday.
I actually think last year's performance was much worse because they conceded a goal after 9 seconds or 11 seconds. So, not to get bogged down in it, but it is back-to-back, as you rightly point out, back-to-back All-Ireland final performances where they haven't produced what we think is their best football. All week long when we were previewing this game, we talked about the relative strength of the bench. Like, Cathal McShane scores a beautiful goal with his first touch and Mayo don't get anything off their bench comparatively. The chaos that Mayo like to bring, the better analysts are like, well, that's all well and good in the middle of a game, but if that's your game plan, then actually it can become counterproductive. Somebody, one of the papers has printed a Paul Galvin tweet saying he wouldn't have been able to play half forward in that game because all the backs are running into your space, taking all your space. You know, where's the opportunity for the half forwards to create? I think we've got now the Holy Trinity or the full house of self-inflicted wounds by Mayo in an All-Ireland final. It's the red card when the game is there for them. Just maintain your superiority. The two own goals in a game where Dublin don't perform in an All-Ireland final. This thing about the Dubs were always brilliant on All-Ireland final day. They always managed the process. They needed two own goals to scrape a draw against the best Mayo team of that time. And now the missed penalty. And everybody's like, oh, Tyrone would have won anyway. But I'm not sure Tyrone would have won anyway. The point that Andy Moore was making the whole week was, here are two teams who have not got through this. Next year, if Mayo score a penalty against Tyrone in the All-Ireland final and Tyrone go on to win it, we will know that they would have gone on to win it. But this year, there was room for someone to put doubt in that Tyrone team's mind. There was that moment where Mayo had that opportunity to do it and they couldn't do it. And look, would Cillian O'Connor have nailed the penalty? Yeah, I think he probably would. I think we all think Cillian O'Connor would have nailed the penalty. And that's just going to be a harsh thing for them forever. But I think what happens in matches like this is that teams get born and we see something forged. And I think now Tyrone are going to be around for the next 2 or 3 years and they're going to win tight games that champions win. That thing that Andy Moran talked about. And Mayo still haven't got that. All the stuff about that this Mayo team haven't had success at underage level and so therefore they don't have ghosts anymore and they don't have baggage. Now they all have baggage. And I mean, when they overcome that, it's going to be the most remarkable thing of all time.
There are a number of things that they got wrong on Saturday, obviously. When it comes to the substitutions and the decisions on the sideline, it did feel that Horan absolutely nailed it in the semi-final and something just didn't go right on Saturday. Obviously, they'll have had more information than we'll have had spectating. But I'm not sure what your view on the Portugal Horror substitution was. Like that for me puts him right into the bad this week because that's a sort of self-inflicted wound for me right after he makes this lung busting run up the pitch. The sort of run that kind of disrupts a very well-organised defence. I don't even want to call it a well-organised defence. A well-organised collection of defenders is probably a better way of putting it. Like top quality defenders who are doing a brilliant man-to-man job in pretty much all their defensive positions. So when you've got a man running towards you and you've got to step off your man a little bit to try and stop this incoming train, that causes doubt, that causes a little bit of chaos in that Tyrone defence, which perhaps they wouldn't have liked. And I thought that if you're making that sort of lung-busting effort up the pitch, maybe he knew he was getting taken off and maybe he knew that was the last effort he had. As I say, there is more. We don't have all the information available, but it just seemed like a very unusual substitution. Look, we'll get into Aidan O'Shea a little bit later on as well, and of course there's been a lot of people coming to the defence in terms of personal attacks and all that, and that is all right and good, and of course he handled a good bit of ball in that second quarter of the game, but I thought he just didn't work again on Saturday in a really big game. And I thought that same substitution that Horan made, maybe not the same personnel wise, but taking off Aidan O'Shea in the semi-final, I thought that was coming. I was like, this is only a matter of time before he makes the exact same change. So I was surprised when that didn't happen, and I was surprised when Podrigo Horan did get taken off. So I think that kind of hammers home a little bit of misery for Mayo.
Yeah, so Horan was Marco McCurry, is that? Like,
yeah,
and certainly that seems to be it. And so McCurry played well and scored and was creating chances, but like, that's going to happen. Like, Clifford played well and scored, but that was because somebody is going to be doing the scoring. Like, I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe there was an injury or something, or there was a knock that we didn't see, but certainly if you want your chaos and war to be happening, he is a man who's bringing chaos and war. Like, Oisín Mullen is the one who ends up getting caught underneath McShane for the goal. And Oisín Mullen is going to go on to have one of the great Mayo Gaelic football careers. There's no doubt about it. But he looked a little bit lacking in sharpness, as you would do, having had the injury and not been at full tilt for the last while. And I don't know, they obviously weren't going to take him off. But on the sideline, it definitely seems like what Tyrone had trumped what Mayo had, and that's going to be very hard for James Horan to take, given the progress that this team have made. The other side about Mayo, and look, we're talking about them now because we'll talk about Tyrone later on, is that there are some, I mean, you have better access to this information than most people, but the talk around Mayo is that some of those kids that are coming through are really good. They brought on a young fella that many of the rest of the country didn't know, with the
Orm.
Say it again.
Orm. So I'd heard in Mayo during the week that this guy was potentially with a shout of starting the game. I hadn't seen him play against Leitrim earlier in the year. Tommy had. He was saying that maybe in a couple of years' time, once he fully bulks up, he'll be a good player. But there's like real excitement about him, and I think that's kind of been the trend for this Mayo team over the last two seasons in particular, where players have been coming out of the blue, and all of a sudden they've arrived and they've been really, really good pretty quickly. And I think Mullen and O'Hara fall into that category, actually, that right away that they're not at this point, they're like your first two names alongside Lee Keegan in your defensive team sheet, but kind of when they first come along the scene, you're like, who's this guy? And they've come up to speed really quickly. That's the real positive for Mayo, is that,
yeah, like, so again, to go back to, I think it was Conor McKeown on the papers a couple of weeks ago talking about when Mayo get annihilated by the Dubs in, was it an All-Ireland semi-final, or was it a
semi-final 19.
Yeah, and if you were to say at that point that Mayo would be in an All-Ireland final with a chance of winning it quickly, everybody would have said you're doting, because that team is finished, and it's finished for the long and actually what they've done is they've rebuilt. So, you know, again, you look at the age profile of the teams. Tyrone are more advanced. They've got more around that 25, 27, 29, 30 than Mayo do. And so maybe seasoned by another 18 months, maybe next year isn't the year, and it's the year after that this Mayo team actually reaches its full expression. But by that point, Kevin McLaughlin, you know, maybe he's gone in 2 years' time. Is Lee Keegan coming back next year? I don't know. I really hope he does, because his performance was absolutely sensational in terms of being somebody. Like, I don't want this to be a pile-on Mayo, right? Because it's very easy in the aftermath of that to say, there you go, stereotypical. But every time something really bad happened, they came back and scored a point. Like
a Lee Keegan point.
The two goals, they came back and scored the next point immediately afterwards. Yeah. It was like, what is undead can never be killed. Whatever that line was. their zombie quality is actually something to be celebrated and admired. And at the same time, this is going to be the heartbreaking defeat that is very hard for them to come back from.
And I kind of go along with that idea as well, that there might actually be brighter days pretty soon as well, because if they manage to get this far with this generation that's coming up not actually fully formed yet, then what can they possibly do next? Of course, I think that the championship might get a little bit more, get even more competitive over the next couple of seasons, so it might be difficult for them to get to that level. But like, it's in the context of Saturday, this is obviously desperately disappointing for Mayo. They were favourites for an All-Ireland final. They underperformed on the day, but this wasn't some sort of last chance for them. Of course, as you point out, this the problem for Mayo now is that this adds a layer of baggage for the first time ever to, for a lot of these players, because for me they looked a little bit carefree in the semi-final in a brilliant way, in an absolutely brilliant way, and now this adds that little layer of we've been here in a final that we were expected to win and we just didn't show up. But you're right about what you say about Tyrone as well. Like, Enda McGinley made the point on the show yesterday that actually this Tyrone team is more experienced than the Mayo team. Yes, if you look at County Mayo versus County Tyrone, of course the County of Mayo has more baggage than the County of Tyrone. But not these players pre-match, not these players. These players are younger than the Tyrone players. These Tyrone players, in fact, have played in the 2018 final, a lot of them, and had been desperately disappointed from that, and they've managed to come back. So there is a difference here. And of course, this is all, I guess, revisionism after the fact, but maybe we should have seen this coming a little clearer. I know, in fairness, the prevailing analysis before the game was this is a 50-50 game. And I don't think anybody was really saying that Mayo are definitely going to win this. People just had a hunch that Mayo were going to win this. But maybe if we dug down a little bit deeper, the experience that Tyrone has and the age profile that they have and the bench that they have, I guess those are the sort of things that definitely get you over the line in a tight game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was predicting on this show that Tyrone were going to win. And just to, I want to put that on the record here. You were like, oh, no, I think it's going to be Mayo. And then I kind of, I wavered a bit at the last minute and went for the draw on Friday night show, which I shouldn't have done. I was just,
why did you waver? What changed your mind?
Swept away by the conspiracy theories. Well, because I wanted to manifest it into, I wanted us all as a country to manifest another week of this. Wouldn't that have been great? Wouldn't another week of us talking nonsense about Mayo against Tyrone, except with 97 minutes of evidence, have been fairly sensational?
Yeah, no, it would have been absolutely. It felt a little bit disappointing that we didn't get the grandstand finish.
It does. What I do think about this is that if these two teams played a best of seven or a best of nine, it would be a smashing victory for Tyrone over that series at the moment. That these two teams are actually, that there's significant daylight between them, and that's evident now, as it wasn't pre-game. And I think I think that those final 20 minutes are when that Tyrone team are in many ways post the penalty, and I do actually think that the penalty is a huge moment, because it gives Tyrone the sense that well now this is right there for us, and also the quality of their bench becomes so much more evident at that stage. I'd love to see them go behind just to see what they're like when they go behind.
In the business end of the game, obviously.
Yeah, because they were, obviously 2 points down. Is it the first team since 2004, 2005 to concede the first two scores and to go on and win the game? So all the signs were there for Mayo.
Yeah, they certainly were. But I kind of agree with you on that as well, that there was a bit of a gap between them at the end. And I couldn't really identify that beforehand.
Look, Malachy Clerkin's piece, the subheading is Horan needs to find a role for O'Shea and end his torment once and for all. The role is full forward with Killian O'Connor playing off him, isn't it? And Tommy Gold's playing off him. So you've got a three-man full forward line, and I think Killian O'Connor's absence is so important, because he's got that hard tackling edge, that kind of plays on the edge, sets the tone. He's the one. And they didn't really have that in the full forward line. They have a lot of nice forwards who are young and are coming into themselves. And up against Tyrone, there's nothing nice about those Tyrone lads. They've come up iron sharpens iron in the club game in Tyrone, and they know exactly how they're supposed to tackle, and they know exactly how to deal with that. So
there's something there. I do think players like Conroy have got that edge this season, and the amount of work he kind of went through in the middle third the other day, and definitely in the semi-final against Dublin, you're kind of like, all right, this guy's got that hard tackling element that you need to be a full forward player for Mayo, because that was the whole thing about their run to the final last year, was all the turnovers Killian O'Connor and Aidan O'Shea were involved in up front. And I think Tommy Conroy had kind of contributed to that this year as well. But you add Killian O'Connor to the mix there, it is an exciting team, and they'd kind of get found out without Killian O'Connor at the weekend. But why didn't they go route one a little bit more in the second half?
I don't know. I don't know, it doesn't make any sense. And as somebody pointed out, it was actually, it ended up being Aidan O'Shea kicking high balls into where Aidan O'Shea should have been. Like, the system broke down because the system hadn't been ingrained enough or clearly defined where, you know, we talk about the identity of teams. Tyrone's identity is very, very clear, and we'll get to that in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, just one other thing we want to get to in the bad this morning in the red, Irish rugby. You might have seen this yesterday, an apology being issued from the IRFU and Leinster Rugby over an unacceptable error that forced teams to change in pretty appalling conditions, I think it's fair to say. We have footage up here on screen, nothing like getting forced to change in these conditions with rats running around. This was at Energia Park yesterday at an Interpros doubleheader. Like, this is a Connacht player who had shared that footage, and you can see there that they were like absolutely horrific conditions that they were forced to change. And as I said, the mention of rats there as well, which you couldn't actually identify in the video. There's an IRFU statement that came out saying that they would like to apologise to players, management and representatives of Connacht and Ulster. Sorry for the inconvenience caused by an unacceptable error in relation to the positioning of temporary changing facilities. They said due to current government guidelines, changing facilities are not available for amateur rugby teams. These temporary facilities should have been set up in a more appropriate area. The IRFU and Leinster Rugby are extremely sorry for the inconvenience to the teams and the upset this unacceptable error has caused.
Yeah, somebody made the point, the Tyrone and Mayo lads aren't getting changed down the alleys of Drumcondra. They too are an amateur team, so justifiably outrage from people suggesting this would never happen to the men. It's ludicrous to suggest that this is something to do with the amateur stuff. Eventually the IRFU come out and apologise, but it just isn't good enough, and everybody knows it's not good enough. And really, every time there's like a quantum leap forward for women's sport in Ireland, you still get dragged back in by crap like this. So you know, we're just trying to highlight that this morning. This is still going on.
We will move on to the amber, the meh, the grand. And in here we are going with the chasing pack. This is a kind of a zoomed out version of what the Football Championship might look like over the next couple of years as a result of what we saw on Saturday. So I guess, like, what are the lessons that some of the counties who aren't favourites for the All-Ireland Championship over the next couple of years, what are the lessons that they can take away from Tyrone actually prevailing? Like, I guess what they could take away in a positive sense is that Tyrone won a lot of close matches this year. They managed to get into a fight with Kerry, managed to get into a fight with Mayo and win convincingly enough in both occasions, or look like a much better team. You go through their Ulster Championship, and when it came to the close calls, they managed to prevail. So getting close to teams is obviously the first step. And then also the kind of from nothing nature of their win, it is possible to kind of get to the promised land from a fairly tough position earlier in the year. But I think I'm kind of clutching at straws there at maybe some of the positives that other teams can take from this. I think in reality what we have here is an outstanding Tyrone team. And like there was a bit of blowback when I described them as a brilliant team on Twitter on Saturday. And I think people still have yet to be convinced that this is a brilliant team. People are still pointing to circumstance for why they won this year. So like,
what circumstance though? The fact that like McShane, who was a contender for Football of the Year a couple of years back, wasn't fit enough to start.
That's it. And all of a sudden then you have him as an impact sub. So like, what teams can perhaps not take from this Tyrone setup, because this is quite unique to Tyrone, to the Tyrone team and to the very top teams, is first of all the depth that they have in this squad. And as you mentioned there, Colin McShane being an impact sub, Darragh Canavan being an impact sub. Like, that is outrageous depth. Players of that quality to be coming off your bench to finish out an All-Ireland final and All-Ireland semi-final. That is the stuff of champions in attack right there. They've got a couple of players who are deemed good enough to be professional Australian footballers. Like, I mean, this is this is the level that the likes of McShane and McKenna are operating at. McKenna has succeeded in Australia. He wasn't just a prospect, he was a success story. They've got Brian Duher. I don't think many counties have a man like that on the sideline, a success like that on the sideline, a winner like that on the sideline. They've got an incredible amount of resources that have been used in the right way, which is important. You can't just throw money at a problem. Like, I mean, their Garvahy Centre has been the envy of a lot of Ulster over the last little while. Their coaching setup completely it seems, self-sustained at the moment. Their backroom team, all people from Tyrone, even just the way they had to fight to get Peter Donnelly back into the SNC set up after the great job he did and then being lured away from Tyrone. Getting him back was important. Getting McKenna back, as I mentioned, was important. Keeping McShane at home. Everybody is on side. Everybody realises the importance that every Tyrone person can play in their success. Maybe that is something that other counties can learn from, actually, rather than being unique to Tyrone. They've got a completely football-obsessed county. And I guess, really, the bottom line here is that this wasn't a very big shock at all. I think the reason why this is a big shock, in we got to put it into context of the year, and I think the COVID situation is still in the minds of people when they're a little bit surprised by what happened on Saturday. And that's fair enough. But I think if we separate that from the team that we're witnessing here and the management and the entire setup in Tyrone GAA, once Dublin got knocked out, I think this wasn't a very big shock at all. I think that I think COVID is the reason why this is the unlikely win that it is.
Yeah, for the Chasing Pack, I think the ability to get close to Tyrone will give them some hope. I think the Chasing Pack can also look at what Tyrone did. The type of defensive system that they have, which isn't the out-and-out sweepers, which wasn't the really boring, let's kick the ball back all the time. It's an intelligent iteration. It's smart, it's still aggressive, it's still trying to win games as opposed to not lose them. And that's the sea change in mentality that seems to be with their approach. And you would really hope, I think a lot of teams are doing that. I think Armagh have that, I think Monaghan have that. I think Donegal hopefully will have something that they come back with next year and hopefully get a bit of strength and depth from what happened for them for this year as well. And so all of a sudden, all of those counties must be thinking, well, if we can just get out of whatever championship we have, then we're in with a shout.
And the questions about what that championship may actually look like are going to be more important than ever over the next little while, because what is it, next month we will discover how exactly it's going to look over the next little while. And it's going to be very interesting to see how certain parties vote in that, because I think no matter what way you paint it up, I think that the current structure, even if you go back to the Super 8 structure, I think it's just harder for Ulster teams to survive. I think, of course, if there's a back door and you get knocked out of the Ulster Championship, you're all well and good, and you can maybe build a bit of momentum through the Super 8s if you get that far. But it's still harder to be an Ulster team. So maybe I'm not sure, did the Ulster people, the Ulster delegates, vote in favour of keeping the Ulster Championship because it's such a great money spinner and genuinely a great championship? Or do they vote to try and bring more parity to the competition?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I think the Ulster Championship is one of the reasons why Ulster counties have won so few All-Irelands. Like, it's an immediate war that you have to go through, and then you get to the end of the war and everybody's there like, hey, nice to see you, and it's the Dubs and it's Kerry, and they're like, happy days, you've all killed each other. They're like, I mean, you can barely walk and you're still playing. Like, that's exactly what has happened. If they could just see past it, then this would be a new bright dawn for the Ulster counties in, like, slashing their way through the rest of the country and winning all Irelands. But local rivalries are the things that are most important to people. So, I don't know. We'll come back to that, because that's John Fogarty is out in the papers today that the annual Congress that was slated for this month has been put back to October for the GAA to give more time to the counties to have a think about what's coming next. And we could be going back to 2017. We could be going back to before the Super 8s. We could be going to the Super 8s. Or we could be going to either of the two new proposals that have been put forward. But they both need a 60%. They need to reach more than 60%. And when there's two proposals that are going forward, it's very hard for either of them to reach more than 60%. So, because one of them will be more popular than the other, but it might not be so popular that it gets the mandate. And if it doesn't get the mandate, then there'll be a vote and to go back to the Super 8s. And if that doesn't happen, which, let's face it, might not happen, because a lot of people didn't think the Super 8s were very good, and certainly the way they were constituted, with Dublin having two home games as opposed to everybody else, that wasn't fair. And then we go back to 2017. Was the 2017 championship any good? Wasn't great. No.
Good final. Pretty good final. But that was about it. Yeah, like there is no consensus whatsoever when you look at people talking about this, about what is actually going to be the best proposal. For me, it's clear, and we've done this on the show before, what the best championship proposal is. And it's not reconstituting the provinces. It's not that one. It's the other one. It's a plan B, I think. But I don't see that reflected in GAA circles and people who've actually kind of voiced an opinion on it. So maybe they're giving themselves extra time that everybody knows exactly what is best for the GAA over the next couple of years, so that everybody gets behind the thing that that needs to happen, because you're like it's just not going to be the reality if you're going to need 60%. So that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Wouldn't it be great if we could see Mayo against Tyrone in a championship match every year? That's what we should be thinking. Like this, the quality of the football was excellent. The drama was like edge of your seat stuff until the penalty miss and the goal got scored, and after that it was absolutely clear what was going to happen. But
it was still an enjoyable game.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I've just seen people giving out about the quality of the football, and you're like, oh, come on.
Really?
The athleticism and skill that we've seen here is like far superior to the stuff that we saw 20 years ago, let alone 40 years ago.
Like, that's a good opportunity to just like flick on to the good here and straight on to Tyrone, because once Paddy Hampsey comes up and like fires that one over the bar with the outside of the boot, like that's the moment where if you think that the quality of the game is not at a high enough level, you probably need to park your arguments at that point, because I don't know, they did it all against Kerry in the semi-final. All three of their full back line came up for scores, and immediately they set that tone against Mayo, where they have like it seems like they've taken a player like Paddy Hampsey and cloned him 13 times. That is what the Tyrone team is. That they have kind of everything. That the hard tackling, aggressive nature when they don't have the ball, and then this unbelievably skillful ability when they have the ball in hand. And I think it might become a bit of a cliche over the next little while. Like, Tyrone don't get enough credit for the footballers that they are. I hope that it doesn't become the reality, because I think on Saturday night it proved what a. It's not just the street smarts and the intelligence that they have to be able to, for intelligence to be used to good effect, you need to have incredible footballers.
And here's the thing: their footballers are actually better footballers than Mayo's footballers. That whole kind of Mayo are a great footballing county, but actually Mayo had the athletes and the workers, and Tyrone had the footballers who were two-footed, who were kicking long-range points, who were finding pockets of space. There's 5 points that you can think of that were scored by 5 individuals on the Tyrone team, where they manufactured space for themselves, or they took what looks like, you know, a low percentage outside of the boot from 40 yards straight over the black spot. Mm. Like, and you actually didn't really think that they were going to go wide. And it's at a level that Mayo don't have, and that many of the other counties actually don't have, and that's the bit that I think that we need to give Tyrone credit for.
Like, I know it's been we've absolutely buried this talking point down through the years about the importance of goalkeepers, but it goes without saying now that really on Saturday night I think that kills the debate about whether or not your goalkeeper should be coming out to contribute with play, because Mayo were a man down. When Niall Morgan was in possession, nobody was closing him down, because what we had was an entirely man-to-man setup.
Yeah.
So nobody was going to leave their man to tackle the 15th man on the pitch.
Well, let's see that talking about with Anthony Moyles in a moment, because there's one other bit that we've got to get to here in the performance rankings.
Yeah, we're just going to quick mention for Raducanu, one of the great sports stories of 2021. If you were sitting at home after the All-Ireland on Saturday night, you were probably watching this. I think it was like something like 7 to 8 million British people were watching this on Channel 4 on Saturday night as she won the US Open, started the tournament as a 400-1 outsider, and never in the history of tennis has anyone fought through 3 qualifying rounds of a Grand Slam before winning the entire thing. There was just a slew of ridiculous moments about her path through this season, her path through this tournament, and it all concluded with an ace on the final point to win it in some fashion. She was ranked 150th before the tournament. She is now up to 23rd, and she won as a qualifier without dropping a single set. Now, winning as a teenager is not unusual. I think there's been 3 teenagers that have won majors over the last few years, but it's the way in which this particular teenager has done it which has been incredible. Because if we go back to Wimbledon, I think on the show we were drawing the comparison between herself and the English football team about how there is this ridiculous pressure heaped on you for no reason whatsoever except for the fact that you were British. And honestly, I wasn't sure how good Emma Raducanu was during Wimbledon. We all now know how absolutely phenomenal she is. Martina Navratilova says, nobody does it fast, this well. She said, her rise has been beyond meteoric. I've never seen it before. That is the truth. And what does it say in the Telegraph?
The Daily Telegraph, like, it's on the very front page. It's her lifting the trophy at the Champions Dinner, and it's instant icon. Emma holds all the aces. You're like, yeah, fair enough. They're projecting forward. Champion Raducanu ready for anything. Yeah, that's good to know. And then the third most important thing is superstar humbled by the Queen's support. That's obviously very, very important that we get the mention of the Queen on the front page of the Telegraph, somehow gooseberrying her way into the credit of the incredible teenager who's just won.
There was a line in The Guardian saying, even a rare message from the Queen, one Eeyore congratulating another. So there you go, the same initials, apparently. The headline on that Guardian piece was that she could become Britain's first billion-dollar athlete. So no pressure to win loads of Grand Slams. You got to become a billion-dollar athlete as well. They spoke to Mark Borkowski, who has worked with Michael Jackson, Joan Rivers and Led Zeppelin, who said, "This is the start of something. She's a billion-dollar girl, no doubt about it. She is the real deal. It's not just that she plays extraordinary tennis. It's also her background, her ethnicity, her freedom of spirit. People also love the fact that she is vulnerable but laughs the pressures away." So there is plenty of, I would say, fully patronising things still being said about a US Open champion. But I think this is the start of something special, to be sure.
5 minutes past 8. That is this week's performance rankings. We're going to be back next with Anthony Moyles.